children's night tales. Bedtime stories,
Knight asked. Gregor glared at Knight but ignored him.
The Triumvirate bent the Abomination to their will, used it to expand the Empire beyond the homeworld and across the stars. They led us to greatness. Then the Abomination found traitors, weaklings, and used them to defeat the Emperor.
The alien seemed genuinely sad as it related the story.
Why did this Abomination turn on the Emperor?
Marie asked.
You ask Irak why the wind blows. The Regulos abandoned the expanded Empire and retreated to the homeworlds, left a true Altari with the planets we'd burnt clean of lesser races. Now the Regulos are too strong to fight. They sit in their palaces and deny any who come to take a piece of their riches.
Gregor spat.
The Regulos shut off all their worlds?
Marie asked. That the Valiant and her children were on the way to one of these planets filled her with dread.
The first worlds are theirs and theirs alone,
the Altari said.
Outer systems are there for trade, to buffer against the rest of the galaxy while the Abomination seeks perfection.
Gregor shook his head.
Because they hate what isn't perfect. There is a forbidden zone around the First Empire. This world is in that zone, too close to the Regulos territory for us to care. But there was a hyperspace signature. The Clan Lord thought it was another faction poaching our territory.
Forbidden zone? Marie asked.
If you were Zeiss, you'd know.
Gregor worked his jaw from side to side.
How you not Zeiss get here?
This world is habitable,
Knight said.
Why isn't it settled?
Why is it forbidden? Artifact world,
the Altari said.
The First Empire killed off some primitive species during the expansion. The Abomination kept it off limits to everyone. It is far too close to regular space for a mining rate. Nothing else for us to take.
What do you know about the Milky Way?
Knight asked.
The big galaxy you can see in the sky.
Too far for hyperdrives,
the Altari said.
Legend says some great darkness is there. We're safe in our stars, but only children's night tales.
He sat back.
Not true. Like triumvirates.
Ever heard of the Karesh?
Marie asked. Gregor's face snapped to one side like he had a tick.
Gregor, do not know Karesh,
the Altari said, taking care to pronounce the name.
The triumvirate is real,
Knight said.
We got to know the Emperor, Archduke, and Prince very well.
Lies!
Gregor shouted, lunging toward Knight, pulling against his restraints. Knight tottered back and pointed his cane at the alien.
No more talk. When the true Altari return, Gregor will be rewarded. We'll destroy humans. The old gods are dead.
Explain this then,
Knight said, sliding a data pad with an image of the Triumvirate's prison on Negev, the three screaming faces carved into the mountainside. Then he swiped the image to show the robotic bodies of the three rulers. Gregor roared, lunging again, shaking the chair's arms and back as he struggled against his restraints. Marie jumped from her chair, backing away, moving closer to the two-way mirror behind her. Knight remained oddly calm.
Lies!
Gregor bellowed.
You speak heresy, Holy One spirits gone, ancestors gone!
Marie held out her hands.
Okay, let's bring it back down. Relax, we won't.
The Altari struggled against his chains, baring his ugly, jagged teeth, growling.
All right, we're done,
Marie said, motioning for Knight to leave. A soldier opened the door from the outside, and Marie followed Knight from the room. Ragar's shouts were muted as the door shut behind them.
You let him have too much control,
Knight said. You pushed him, and there was no reason for it. He was talking.
Knight laughed.
And he told us a great deal, but not enough.
We were in the same room. What did I miss?
The Triumvirate told us they were the rulers of a benevolent empire and were overthrown by traitors, and the last governor bought it. That one in there is telling us the Emperor and the others were taken out in a coup and vanished. Then their empire split. Whoever of the Altari wasn't loyal to the Regulos and that abomination became little better than pirate bands. But what should scare the hell out of us is that we planted our flag on Terra Nova, which both the Altari and these Regulos won't stand for. We're squatting in two backyards.
Then let's hope Carson can convince these Regulos to cut us a break,
Marie said, stepping around him. Knight wrapped his cane against the floor.
He knows more, a lot more about the strength of the Altari and the Regulos. Let me start working on him. Hours-long interrogations, asking him the same questions over and over again to see if his story ever changes. I'll need some white noise generators, and we need to remove the bed from his cell. He clams up in a couple guards in power armor with shock prods, or...
No! Marie spun on him, pointing.
Out of the question!
She looked up at the soldier still standing guard outside the door.
No one gets in. Unless expressly permitted by me or Governor Hill, is that understood?
Yes, ma'am.
And under no circumstances will Mr. Knight be allowed access without me.
Yes, ma'am,
the soldier repeated, giving Knight a stern glare. Knight threw his hands up.
Oh, come on! You want answers and not?
I'm very serious, Mr. Knight. And let's get one thing straight here. You're a guest, nothing more. I'm well aware of your history and that of Ms. Shannon's. Push me, and you'll find yourself in a cell right next to our friend.
She nodded to Gregor's room. Marie returned 30 minutes later with a tray of food. The guard nodded at her and opened the door without a word. Gregor looked up as Marie entered and snarled. Marie held out the tray.
I'm not here to ask you any questions. I brought you some food.
She set the tray down in front of the Altari, silverware clinking. Without knowing more, she'd thrown several different entrees together. Steak, chicken, salad, broccoli, even a slice of pizza. She motioned to the guard and he released one of the Altari's hands from the restraints.
Hopefully something here will be acceptable,
she said, stepping back. The Altari examined the plate. He leaned forward and sniffed a few of the portions, then picked up the slice of pizza. He ate half the slice in one bite, and a moment later, his eyes went wide, flicking up to Marie.
It's good,
he said.
It's very good.
Marie nodded.
Pepperoni's my favorite, too.
Gregor finished the rest of the pizza in one bite, then moved on to the rest without slowing to swallow. He ripped off a bite of steak, then switched to the chicken, growling as he chewed.
I'll leave you to it, then,
Marie said.
I'll come back and check on you later.
Chapter 14 Carson and West stood behind the pilot's couches, looking out into the black nothingness that was FTL space. After almost a week cooped up on the Valiant, Carson was ready to step foot on solid ground again, not to mention returning to real space, where there wasn't a threat of becoming some infinite cluster of matter stretched through the universe in some kind of weird human quantum rift. Greer tapped a command into her terminal, then grabbed the controls with both hands. Okay, dropping out of FTL in 5, 4, 3. The all-encompassing blackness vanished in a flash of light, and the Valiant re-entered normal space. Carson had never been so happy to see the stars.
Stealth systems active?
Lincoln said.
All systems nominal. FTL drives are winding down.
Where are we? Carson asked. Greer checked her console. Data's still coming in, but it looks like we are in the L2 Lagrange point, above a third planet in the system, right where we want it to be.
Look at that,
West said, pointing. Ahead of them, a massive space station hung in the void above an alien world, hanging against the backdrop of stars. The spherical structure dwarfed anything Carson had ever seen. Several segmented layers seemed to float over the surface of the behemoth, rotating slowly around its circumference. Long pylons connected these segments to several large docking rings orbiting the station, some at distances of up to a kilometer. It was night on the planet below. Clusters of light spread across the dark surface of the world, covering what looked like the entire globe. Strings of lights, hundreds, perhaps thousands of ships, stretched between the station and planet and to a moon orbiting the planet.
That thing's almost as big as the Crucible,
Lincoln said, reading the data on his console.
That's gotta be hell on traffic control, Carson said, shaking her head at the incredible sight.
As they watched, several ships dropped out of warp in flashes of light above the station. The new arrivals moved away from each other, some heading for the planet, others to the station. Ships warped away at random intervals, their hulls stretching away briefly before vanishing into the void.
Not just warships that have FTL, then,
West said.
It also begs even more questions,
Carson said, watching rectangular-shaped haulers stretch off into warp.
Which is?
West prodded.
Where are they all going? How many worlds like this are there? This galaxy was supposed to be empty. Well, it's most definitely not. I mean, there are probably billions and billions of people down there. I find it hard to believe that Koresh's probe missed all this. I mean, a civilization like this didn't just pop up overnight.
You think the Koresh lied to us? Or Ibarra lied when he put together the first colony mission. Who didn't want to get away from the war back then?
Carson shrugged.
Koresh are gone. Ibarra's a long way from here.
I'm picking up some system chatter, Greer said, but most of it is scrambled or alien. The translator nodes are scrubbing the data, but who knows how long it'll take to... A flash of light cut across space, meters from the Valiant's bow. Alarm sounded, and tactical warning panels flashed on both pilots' consoles. Greer jumped. What the hell? Lincoln tapped furiously.
I don't know.
Two ships, decidedly smaller than Valiant herself, zipped past the bow at an angle, showing off clusters of ordnance attached to their underbellies. They flipped over, reversing course to intercept them again. Fighters, Greer said. A holo image of one of the ships appeared over the console. Markers indicating hardpoints, engine placement, and a cockpit mounted along the dorsal spine at the front of the aft section.
Were they just shooting at us? West asked.
Your guess is as good as mine, Greer told him. She shot Lincoln a quick glance. Status? He shook his head.
Active sensor dampening is active and functioning to specs. Drives are at standby. They shouldn't have been able to spot us. Our stealth is at 100%.
Something about the size of a trash can smacked against Valiant's hull, a few meters in front of the cockpit's viewport, and stuck there. Almost immediately, panels along its sides and top began unfolding, exposing clusters of antennas, conical communication dishes, and manipulator arms that folded down and clamped onto the Valiant's hull.
The hell? Lincoln said. Something's tapping into our computers. Valiant systems are being accessed.
Shut it down, Greer shouted.
I can't. It's locked me out of the system. Whatever it is moving extremely fast.
Carson tapped a wrist computer.
Birch Nunes, suit up ASAP. We've got...
Wait, Lincoln said. Wait, I don't think it's malicious.
Explain,
Carson said, looking forward to look at the screen.
Whatever it is, it's accessing all of our communication protocols and reading the core data. It's not copying, deleting, or transferring anything. There. It's done.
A light flashed on Greer's console, and before she had time to react, a holographic collage of fractals appeared above the main console between the two pilots, filling Valiant's cockpit with flickering orange light. An image pulsed as a deep, masculine voice said,
"You are in violation of Dysori System Traffic Regulations 3.206F, 12.02, 17.41A, 18.7B1, and 49.DIN. Adjudication has assessed a fine of 7,000 astrals against this vessel. Any further violations will result in fines and or detainment. You are..."
Carson raised a hand.
Hello, can you hear me?
An additional fine of 100 astrals has been assessed to your account. Any further violations will result in fines and or detainment. Carson turned to West, confused. He shook his head and mouthed,
Wait.
The voice continued, Your vessel is hereby slaved and will proceed to Dysori Station Dock 56, Pad 109 for processing. Do not attempt to deviate from your assigned approach vector, as any violation of your instructions will result in additional fines and or detainment. The image vanished as abruptly as it had appeared, leaving the four humans in stunned silence. The two fighters ahead of them turned, thrusters flaring, putting them on course for the station.
What the hell was that?
Greer asked.
I think we just got grounded,
West said.
Yeah, Carson said. But grounded by who?
We're getting flight path information, Greer said. Looks like they're sending us to the planet's surface. Northern hemisphere, looks like a continent on the far side, and the engines are firing without any input from my controls. They really did slave this ship. Want me to find a workaround?
You can get back control? Carson asked.
Greer and Lincoln tapped at their control panels and received angry beeps from the speakers.
Not right now, Greer said.
They said we're to land for processing, Carson crossed her arms, which means we should meet some sort of official. First contact protocols call for determining an alien culture's hierarchy, then negotiate from there.
The Valiant angled down towards the planet and accelerated forwards.
Protocol doesn't encourage putting the ship or crew in danger,
West said.
They saw right through our stealth systems and could have blown us to pieces, Carson said. We'd be in a good deal more danger if we try and break loose. Let's see how this plays out. Greer, Lincoln, figure out some way to dump that parking boot on us and have course set back to Terra Nova should the immediate need arise. That kind of defeats the purpose of why we came out here in the first place.
Roger that, Greer said, punching the data into Valiant's computer. Carson turned to West.
Shall we get dressed for the party?
Chapter 15. As the lift chimed, slowing and settling into position at the indicated level, Marie ran through her list of questions again, hoping the whole pizza she held would be enough to encourage Gregor to be more helpful. The doors opened, revealing a long corridor. Marie stepped from the lift and stopped short at the sight of Knight waiting outside the prisoner's door. He held out his hands to the side.
Look, I'm sorry, I...
Mr. Knight, what are you doing here?
I thought I could help. I know my methods aren't orthodox, but they work, and they're proven techniques, especially when you're looking for truth.
Marie stepped around him, lifting the pizza box over his head.
I believe he was telling the truth.
Knight took a long whiff as she passed.
Pepperoni, huh? Well, it's not a T-bone, but it's something.
He likes it.
Well, he likes it. How do you know that?
I gave him some yesterday,
Marie explained.
You fed him?
Yes,
Marie said, stopping in front of the door.
I fed him. A fact I'm hoping he'll remember while we're talking today.
Vous obtenez plus de mouche avec du miel?
Knight said. Marie paused.
Your French... is merit.
Can't speak it unless you're a snob about it. Savvy.
Knight winked. She shook her head, then nodded at the guard. It was a different soldier today. He turned and entered a code on the wall panel. The lock clicked, and he pulled the door open and stepped out of the way.
He's not to enter,
Marie said, motioning to Knight.
Yes, ma'am,
the soldier said.
Good cop needs a bad cop,
Knight said. Marie ignored him. Inside, Gregor still sat behind the table, hands in his lap. The empty tray now pushed to the side, the only thing remaining were a few stems of broccoli. He looked up at her, his nostrils flaring as she neared.
Didn't like the broccoli, huh?
Marie asked.
It's garbage,
Gregor said. Marie chuckled.
Yeah, it's kind of an acquired taste for some people.
She set the box down and opened the lid, revealing the whole pepperoni pizza inside.
I figured this
In a flash of motion, Gregor leapt from his chair, grabbing Marie from behind. She screamed, but cut it short as he pressed something sharp against her neck. The door snapped open. The guard stood in the corridor, hand on his holstered pistol, eyes wide with fear.
"Get back!"
Gregor yelled, grabbing the pizza box and throwing it into the hallway. The guard jumped out of the way, and it smacked against the wall, opening and spilling pizza slices everywhere. He picked up the translation box and clenched it in the fist holding Marie fast.
"Gregor wants ship!"
the Altari shouted, pulling Marie out into the hallway.
"Gregor will be free!"
"Don't shoot!"
Marie stammered, her fingers wrapping around Gregor's thick arms. The Altari stepped through the door, keeping Marie between him and the guard.
"You will free Gregor!"
The guard backed away, keeping his hand on his pistol.
"I can't let you do that," he said, voice trembling. "Put the weapon down. I've hit the alarm. This place will be crawling with soldiers any second now."
"Gregor, please," Marie pleaded. "It doesn't have to be like this. We're not looking for enemies here."
"The clan does not allow the weak to survive. I will return with honor or die."
"Stop,"
the guard said, keeping 2 meters between them as they moved through the corridor. Knight kept pace behind the guard while leaning heavily on his cane. He leaned around to make eye contact with Marie.
"It's gonna be okay."
"Shut up!"
the guard shouted, half turning.
"Easy go,"
Knight said, calling Marie by her old pilot call sign. He worked the grip of his cane from side to side.
"It's gonna be fine. Just everyone relax and don't do anything stupid. C'est displacé vers la gauche."
Marie frowned, eyeing Knight, trying to decide if she'd heard him correctly. Knight nodded again.
"Gregor will have ship,"
the Altari shouted, pushing Marie forward.
"Gregor will kill this human."
"Please,"
Marie repeated.
"Gregor, it doesn't have to be this way."
"Get on floor,"
Gregor shouted, motioning with his free hand. He tightened his arm around Marie's neck and she gasped for air.
"Give me weapon."
"Okay,"
the guard said, slowly reaching for his pistol.
"I'm gonna put it down."
Gregor loosened his hold enough for Marie to breathe.
"No tricks."
Slowly, using only the tips of his fingers, the guard pulled the pistol from its holster.
"No tricks."
He set it down carefully and stepped away.
"On the floor."
The man lowered himself to the floor, spreading his arms out above his head. Gregor pointed at Knight.
"You do."
Knight said,
"I'm a crusty old man. What am I gonna do?"
The lift chimed at the end of the corridor. The doors opened and Hale stepped out. "Johnson, what in the—"
"Marie!"
"Ken!"
Marie shouted.
"Stay back!"
the Altari growled.
"Gregor, kill human!"
Hale stepped forward, hands palms out in front of him. "Let's all just take a step back here and calm down. We can figure this out. Marie, are you all right?" Marie nodded, but felt Gregor's grasp tighten around her throat. Her gaze flicked from Hale to Knight, who nodded slightly. Hale stopped beside Knight, hands still up.
"Listen, Gregor. We aren't here to hurt you, I promise you. We just want to talk."
"No more talk. Gregor goes now."
"I don't want you to do something that we'd all regret. Now if you can just let her go, we can—"
"Not let go. The clan will take me back."
Marie saw Knight's hand twist his cane's handle, his eyes locked on Gregor's.
"Altari, destroy! De Placé!"
Knight shouted. In one move, Marie threw herself down and to the left, pushing up on Gregor's arm. The sudden movement caught the Altari off guard, and he let out a cry of surprise as Marie dropped from his grasp. The cry was cut short as Knight raised his cane tip off the ground and aimed it at the alien's head. There was a gunshot, and Marie felt a searing pain tear through her shoulder. She screamed, covering her shoulder as she hit the floor. She rolled away from the Altari and heard a body hit the floor. Gregor lay face down, a wet hole the size of a palm in his back and a pool of maroon blood spreading around him.
"Marie!"
Hale moved past Knight, kneeling next to Marie's side.
"I'm fine,"
Marie told him through gritted teeth. She pulled her fingers away from her shoulder, warm with blood.
"What the hell were you thinking?"
Hale shouted at Knight.
"You could have killed her!" "I was saving her life,"
Knight said, tossing his cane aside and walking toward Marie with ease. Marie turned, grimacing.
"Is he—"
Knight kicked the alien.
Looks like I hit him in a major artery. Oops.
God damn it,
Hale said, helping Marie to her feet.
You didn't need to kill him. There goes all our inside knowledge of the galaxy.
Well, I wasn't trying to kill him.
Knight kicked the body again.
These Altari are built a bit differently than us. It's part of your grand interrogation methods.
Marie dabbed at the bullet wound on her shoulder. The round had split her skin, but managed little more than a flesh wound.
You would rather I let him kill you? Eventually he would have figured out that we didn't have another ship for him, and I doubt he would have let you go with an all shucks.
You never needed that cane,
Hale said.
Sometimes these old bones creak when the weather gets cold,
Knight said.
Had to sell that I needed it to y'all. None of you can act to save your lives.
You're under arrest until I can figure out what to do with you,
Hale said. Hand over your other weapons. Knight stared at Hale for a long moment, jaw muscles flexing. Finally, he removed a fighting knife from a sheath strapped to his ankle. He spun the knife around in his grip and handed it hilt first to Hale. The blade had a faded inscription. Cry Havoc.
I have a sentimental attachment to that,
Knight said.
Corporal Johnson,
Hale said. Take Mr. Knight into custody and escort him to his residence. You're to remain there until relieved. Understood?
Yes, sir.
Johnson stepped behind Knight and grabbed him by the wrist and shoulder, then led him away.
We need to get you to the infirmary,
Hale said, turning to inspect his wife's wound as the lift doors closed. The blood had stopped seeping through her fingers, but the pain still pulsed.
I think it looks worse than it is.
Come on.
Hale led her to the lift, pressed the call button, and waited for it to return. He looked back over her shoulder.
Did you really bring him pizza?
Marie grimaced as pain radiated out from her shoulder. She looked back at the Altari's body.
It's not like I put pineapple on it.
Chapter 16.
And you do F reporting,
another guard said, snapping to attention. It tapped the butt of its disruptor halberd on the metal deck. Jared looked up from the middle of the procedural growth tank's display screens. Eddies. The Nether Guard spread its feet, tilting its halberd forward. Two blue stripes had been painted onto the chest of the soldier's slate-gray armor, identifying it as a field sergeant, its mental processes slightly more enhanced than the rest of its brothers. It held its helmet under the crook of its free arm, faceplate folded up. Implanting the Nether Guard with human military customs and courtesies had been unavoidable. The care programming from the older Doughboy models took too long to adjust. The prince, by far the most militant of the triumvirate, had seethed while watching the Nether Guard march to human specifications, but hadn't insisted on any changes. Yet. Jared finished reviewing the daily report, then moved around the tank to address the new arrival. Report.
Emperor Kyrios requests your presence on the command deck, Battle Commander.
Of course he does,
Jared thought, wiping his hands with a rag. Thank you, 2F. You may report back to your station. The soldier snapped back to attention, clicking its heels together.
By your will, Battle Commander.
It turned and left Jared alone with the growth tank. He considered the bodies inside for a long moment, wishing nothing more than to pull the plug of the whole damn thing. Flash-growing Altari bodies was difficult enough. Incorporating the many aesthetic changes the Triumvirate insisted on made it even more challenging. Golden skin was a rare mutation in the Altari genome, and forming the face to match grainy pics was a chore. But there was no choice. He had to obey. He hadn't been able to locate Sarah and Mary since they'd arrived at the Altari fortress. Kyrios and the Archduke had hidden the stasis containers well. The thought of his wife being held in that damn pod forever turned Jared's stomach, more than once bringing the man to his knees with regret and anguish. He should have killed them when he had the chance, should have never allowed the damn triumvirate to return to Terra Nova, should have never freed them from their prison. This was his entire fault. The blood of every human, Altari, and whatever else lived in this galaxy would be on his hands. All that suffering would trace back to his weakness. He sealed the restricted alcove and gave the instructions for his armor to be attached. Panels retracted from the walls and ceiling and skinny Waldo arms extended, each holding a segment of armor. The process took just under a minute, and as the helmet came down, thoughts of smashing through the cloning tanks with his armored gauntlet flashed through his mind. Jared stepped into the command center, now fully powered and operational. Teams of Altari technicians operated the hundreds of stations on every level. Altari captains stood in an unorganized group to one side of the lowered command deck, all keeping wary eyes on the Nether Guard stationed strategically around the room. An entire company had been assigned to sentry duty here, with other companies patrolling the rest of the fortress. The Emperor stood in the center of the command deck, speaking to the holo image of an Altari captain.
"And you will submit to my rule, Captain. The Altari Empire will no longer be relegated to piracy and simple trading. That is beneath us."
The captain canted his head to the side. The life-size projection flickered orange-white, the alien's audio slightly distorted.
"You're extremely convincing. But just because you say you are the Emperor, ancestors bless him, that doesn't mean that you are. Just because some of the clan support your claim doesn't mean the rest of us will follow in their footsteps. The Altari have played this game before."
Kailani, in her black and red garb, stepped forward.
"Chal, he speaks the truth. The Triumvirate survived their exile."
"Survived," the captain said, sneering. "I see nothing more than a machine. You are a fool for believing his lies, Kailani. Were it not for you, I would destroy this imposter right here and now. If Kyrios's consciousness did in fact survive and is now contained in that thing, he is no different from the abomination. He is no longer a true Altari."
"I believe him, Troll,"
Kailani said.
"We have seen the reports from Negev. Captain Devry returned just 3 days ago and confirmed the Emperor's account of the story. They crushed the Regulos in space, saw the Emperor's prison."
"Devril."
Troll looked away for a moment, then said,
"I have seen no such evidence."
Using the armor's connection to the station's systems, Jared found the relevant files and forwarded them on. A second later, Troll looked away again as someone reported the data transmission.
"What is this?"
"Your evidence," Jared said. Kyrios turned.
"My herald has arrived."
Jared bowed his head. "Master." He stepped past Kyrios and addressed the Altari captain. "You can witness the Triumvirate's glorious return with your own eyes.
See the power and majesty. The true Altari Empire will rise again. You can either walk with us or be crushed under our boots.
You and your people have lived under the lies and false promises of the abomination for too long. The galaxy will burn, and the Altari will arise from the ashes."
Troll stood silent for several moments, either watching the video feeds from Negev or contemplating Jared's words, or both. Captain Devril, one of the only surviving captains from the Negev Expeditionary Fleet, had returned with the news that indeed the Triumvirate had escaped and verified the Regulos' involvement. His report had swayed most of the reluctant few that had remained unconvinced.
"And what could the old Emperor do?" Troll asked. "The Regulos command a massive fleet. We've managed little more than raids against their trade world since the coup. No other race comes close to matching its power, much less having the ability to defeat it."
The Emperor's words appeared on Jared's HUD. "Nothing will be able to stand against the power of the United Altari. We will crush the abomination and wipe its memory from existence. You have arrived at a most opportune time, Captain." Jared's blood ran cold as he read the next words. "Our preparations for our initial attack are complete and our armies are ready. We will add your vessels and crews to the might of our armada and send a message across the galaxy with one blow. You need only submit to the one true Emperor, beg forgiveness, and witness the coming glory of the Altari." At the side of the command deck, the other Altari captains murmured their assent. Jared could practically feel their excitement build as he spoke.
"Glory to the Emperor!"
one of the captains shouted.
Glory to the Emperor! Echoed another.
Soon the entire group was chanting, fists raised high. As the intensity of their chorus grew, the remaining Altari crew throughout the command center joined in, and the entire chamber reverberated with their voices. Jared couldn't hear what the holo image of the Altari captain said, but the alien nodded, and Jared knew what had just happened. The Altari were now of singular purpose, and that purpose was the Emperor's will. Chapter 17 Dysore Station wasn't just a spaceport, it was an entire city. A city that stretched from horizon to horizon in the biggest metropolitan area Carson had ever seen. Skyscrapers, three times the size of the largest buildings ever to grace Earth's skyline, dominated the landscape. Smaller ones, these still hundreds of stories tall, rose from the city every few blocks. Most of the buildings appeared completely utilitarian, steel frames, mirrored windows, dark gray concrete corner pylons. Every 10 or 20 floors, wide landing platforms sprouted from the buildings, most serving as landing pads for shuttles or smaller flyers. A few had what appeared to be company logos affixed near the top floors. Smoke poured from industrial factories, placed in the city in seemingly random locations, with no thought to aesthetics or modern zoning requirements. Several blocks worth of warehouses, manufacturing plants, and refineries sat south of the spaceport, all feeding a constant line of massive box haulers, delivering or picking up freight. The skies above the city were filled with traffic, from small personal shuttles to lumbering flatbed barges, hauling stacks of multicolored cargo containers. A group of ships containing large spherical containers cut through Valiant's indicated flight path, forcing the ship to slow to avoid a collision. Several kilometer-wide platforms floated above the city, throwing wide swaths of the metropolis in shadow as they moved slowly across the landscape. More buildings, though considerably smaller than their brothers on the surface, sprouted from these platforms. They seemed to be less industrial and more like they were used as residential towers. Gardens, parks, even pools surrounded them, some extending right up to the edges of the platform. Several pools stretched into the sky beyond the platform's edge, giving swimmers a terrific view of the cityscape below. The Valiant descended past one of these platforms, giving Carson and the others a good view of the aliens inhabiting the complexes. Several insect-like creatures, with several sets of spiny legs, moved, almost glided across a swath of bright purple grass, without giving the human ship so much as a cursory glance. Two sets of pincers, the size of a human arm, extended out from a bulbous head at the front of its long body, opening and shutting in rhythm with its steps. Lincoln shuddered.
Holy shit. Those things are creepy.
Let's hope we don't have to deal with those, Greer said. They don't much look like the forgiving sort.
That's two,
West said. What do you mean? Carson asked.
Two different species of alien counting the Altari. Well, three, I guess, if you count the cyborgs. I wonder how many we're going to encounter. It's actually kind of intriguing, this whole setup,
West said. Because there could be potentially hundreds of species living together on this planet? Carson asked.
Exactly. I mean, think about it. Humans have been trying to figure out how to coexist for thousands of years, unsuccessfully, I might add. And that's just one species. The multi-species city back on New Bastion runs into all sorts of issues. If this galaxy's managed to figure out a way for races to live and work together, it bodes well for our mission, at least.
Carson considered his logic and nodded.
Because if they can coexist with others, they'll probably do the same with us. Maybe even provide support, West said.
Let's not put the cart before the horse just yet. We still have to actually meet him.
Translation protocols, Lincoln said, looking up from his console.
Excuse me? Carson asked.
That's what that probe was doing.
Lincoln pointed to the cluster of alien sensors still mounted on Valiant's hull.
It accessed out computer data and worked up translation protocols based on our programming language and stored data. Looks like it's some kind of universal translation program.
Impressive,
West said.
Looks like it's open source, Lincoln said. The program is transferable.
The Kairesh used a similar system on Bastion for interspecies communication. I can link it to your personal IR systems.
Do it, Carson said. A panel flashed on Greer's console, indicating their course to their landing pad. Plot lines appeared, leading them on a curved trajectory to a semi-enclosed structure in the middle of a wide spaceport. They passed over several other alien ships, all arranged in orderly rows. Pulsing lines drew a square around their pad, situated between a large, dilapidated-looking hauler and a sleek, streamlined ship about the size of Valiant herself.
That ship looks fast as shit, Lincoln said.
West frowned, pointing at the hauler.
That thing? It doesn't even look like it could get off the ground.
Not that one. That one.
Lincoln pointed to the smaller vessel. Carson put a hand on West's shoulder.
Come on, let's get the team prepped.
Fuck it.
Carson shook her head.
I don't think offloading a fully armed combat team would be appropriate, just yet.
You're probably right about that, West said.
Light kit, camo cloaks. Maybe some ponchos so we don't look as conspicuous, Carson said. No weapons on the contact team. Have an overwatch element just out of sight that's armed. Wouldn't want to get another fine.
Valiant's landing struts groaned as the sprinter ship settled onto the landing pad. Pistons hissed and pressurized gas blew out from relief valves along the underside of her hull. Carson stood at the top of the ramp looking out over the expansive spaceport. There must have been hundreds of ships, from tiny personal craft to large haulers like the ship on the pad to their left. A small triangular craft zipped down out of the sky, flared briefly, then touched down on the tarmac 30 meters away from Valiant's cargo ramp. Hinged doors folded up from either side of the craft, coming together at the top, and several figures stepped out. Carson took a long breath.
This time, it's gonna be different,
she told herself, and started down the ramp. She'd made it 2 steps across the tarmac when she froze, eyes locked on the figure at the front of the approaching group. The leader was Altari, similar to the one they brought back to Terra Nova, but with orange skin and a sleeker build and not as cyborged as the ones they'd found on the bridge of the dying ship. A silvery mechanical implant sprouted about 1 inch from the side of his head at the temple, cables connecting it to something underneath its long, flowing purple robes. The robes were tucked behind a mechanical chest piece that wrapped around its body. 4 robot attendants followed, each walking on 2 thin, double-jointed legs, which bent opposite of human legs. Their arms were overly long, stretching down past the first knee joint. The spherical torso was dull gray metal, adorned with several groups of indicator lights and closed access panels. Their heads, like reversed arrowheads, with 3 red orbs for eyes, sat on thin, segmented necks that constantly twisted around, obviously searching for threats.
Maybe this isn't a utopia after all,
Carson thought, stepping onto the tarmac. She stopped a few feet away, giving her team enough space to fill in behind her, but putting her close enough to the ship that they could still make a hasty exit if need be. The group stopped 3 meters away, the orange-skinned alien visually inspecting Valiant's hull. He produced a data slate and stylus from somewhere inside his robes and started making notes without taking his eyes away from the ship, saying nothing. Carson waited. First contact meant approaching aliens on their own terms. Only when the safety of her team or their ship was in danger would she act on her own. After several awkward minutes, the alien stopped writing and looked down at his pad, seeming to review the data he'd just entered. Without looking up from the pad, it spoke, its voice coming out almost like a croaking sound a frog would make. Carson's earbud translated the alien's words to English in almost real time.
I am Adjudicator Malastar. This vessel is not registered with DIN or any of its subsidiaries. It is also bearing non-approved external components not registered with DIN compliance, and additional fines may be added to your citation. Please present your identification chips and transit authority warrant.
Carson hesitated.
My name is Warrant Officer Catherine Carson, Terra Nova Pathfinder Corps. We're here to establish improper protocol,
the envoy said, interrupting her with a wave.
You will present your transit warrant or we will notify your consulate of the violation. You will be held in contempt of Regulation 1.703. Transit warrant required. Present your warrant, please.
I don't have an improper protocol.
The data slate appeared in Malastar's hand again and he made additional notes.
Wait, Carson said. What do you mean, our consulate?
The Zeiss Consulate, of course,
the envoy said without looking up.
They will have the opportunity to provide valid information to rectify this situation. Until then, this vessel is under the jurisdiction of DIN compliance to be released upon verification of warrant status. Additional fines may apply.
Another droid appeared, flying out of the back of the envoy's shuttle. It zipped past both parties, attaching itself to Valiant's hull. There was a series of clanks and whirling of gears as the droid clamped onto the drive chassis.
Now hold on just a second, Carson said, stepping forward.
Two of the robot sentries stepped up on either side of the envoy. Carson stopped mid-step, then backed up. The sentries watched her for a moment, then stepped back out of the way. Malastar stepped forward, holding out a small data chip.
Your temporary DIN account.
Look, Carson said, taking the chip and trying to keep the frustration out of her tone.
I was just trying to say that I'm not sure who these Zeiss are, but we're not them.
She motioned to the assembled team behind her.
We're human. We came here from Terra Nova to contact something called the Sacred Intelligence.
We are the rightly guided.
The alien said,
use of the previous title is only for internal communications during declared emergency. Dinosaur is under heightened alert condition 4.
Great. Language games, Carson thought. Why the heightened alert condition?
Carson asked. The envoy canted its head to the side, large round eyes squinting at the humans as if seeing them for the first time. Its head tilted to the other side, like a dog might tilt its head at a strange sound. Lights began to flash on the mechanical harness, and his mouth opened and closed, though no words came out. He looked down at his slate, mumbling to himself as if trying to gather his thoughts.
No existing information for a Terra Nova located within DIN registrant. No existing information for a human located within DIN registrant. Negative compliance will result in a fine.
If I'm not in your system, then that proves we're new to this galaxy and don't know your rules,
Carson said, stepping forward again. All four sentries stepped forward this time, forming a protective line in front of the envoy. Their lanky arms came up, forearm panels folding back, revealing some kind of weapons aiming straight at the humans.
Cease hostile action immediately,
the sentry directly to Malastar's right said, its voice tinny and mechanical.
Chief,
West warned, putting a hand on her arm. Carson stopped, shrugging West's hand off, putting her hands in the air.
I'm not being hostile. I'm merely trying to figure out what's going on here. Look, if I could just talk to someone in charge, we'd just like to introduce ourselves, and
Malastar leaned to the side, looking between two of the sentries.
Then governance is not available through this node. I am not authorized to conduct initial contact protocols. This is a violation of procedure. I must report this to DIN Central immediately. Further guidance is required.
Malastar turned and began walking back to the shuttle.
Wait!
Carson said. A whine came from the sentries, their weapons warming up.
Cease hostile action immediately.
I'm not hostile, you stupid tin can,
Carson said. West took her arm again.
Chief, there isn't anything you can do now.
Carson allowed him to pull her back, glaring at the envoy as he climbed into his shuttle. The sentries kept their weapons trained on Carson and her team for several seconds. Then, without a word, their forearm panels folded back into place, hiding their weapons. They turned and made their way back to the shuttle.
Son of a bitch,
Carson said as the shuttle lifted into the air. She turned, eyeing the droid that had attached itself to Valiant's hull. Keying her IR, she said,
Greer, any idea what that thing is on the hull?
Some kind of drive inhibitor, Chief. I don't have any control of the engines or navigational systems. Almost like I've been locked out.
Are any other systems affected?
There was a pause. Then Greer said,
No, just engineering and navigation. I have full access to everything else.
Well,
Nunez said,
that could have gone worse.
Carson shot him a raised eyebrow and he shrugged.
I mean, they could have thrown us in jail. Those droids didn't seem to have any problems with blowing us away if it came to that.
Not how I wanted our first meeting to go,
Carson said.
Greer, see if you can figure out a way to get that damn thing off the ship.
Roger that, Chief.
What now?
West said.
Your guess is as good as mine,
Carson said. She nodded at Nunez.
Like he said, they didn't put any restrictions on us, just the Valiant, which suggests that we're free to explore the city. But without any knowledge about this place, I don't have the slightest idea on where to go. We need to get the lay of the land.
Birch, you have a spare drone?
I do.
Let's at least get a scout of the surrounding area. It might give us an idea where to start.
Birch nodded and jogged up the ramp into Valiant's Bay. He reappeared a few seconds later, one of his newer, smaller drones in his hand. He tapped a few commands into his wrist computer, then tossed the drone into the air. It zipped away, stopping 20 meters above the tarmac to get an initial scan of the area. It rotated there for a moment, then turned to start its scouting run.
I've got a good connection, Birch reported. Stepping up, it's... what the...
A large flying droid dropped out of the sky, stopping mere inches from Birch's drone. Two half-domes, attached to a rectangular body, rotated opposite each other. Clusters of antennas extended out from the sides of each dome, and each held a sensor dish, which spun constantly. A red sensor eye above a cluster of antennas on the front of the main rectangular body focused on Birch's little drone.
You are in violation of DIN Compliance Code 11.231A.
A robotic voice announced as an arm extended out from the bottom of the droid and swatted Birch's drone out of the air. It fell to the ground in pieces.
A fine has been assessed to your account. Failure to comply will result in additional fines.
The police drone swooped over the pathfinders and dropped a plastic chit at Birch's feet. Carson threw her arms up in frustration.
Are you kidding us?
Excuse me.
An unfamiliar voice said. Carson turned and saw a short, tan-skinned alien standing several meters away. It was humanoid, bipedal, hands pressed together in front of its chest as if it were praying. Large ears, which were almost the same size as its head, stuck out on either side of its head and flapped slowly. Gold and silver jewelry adorned the outer and middle lobes of each ear, some attached to other rings with small gold chains. Its skin seemed to sag slightly. Its small round eyes set close together seemed almost abnormally small when compared to the rest of its features. Its nose and mouth were elongated like a canine's. It wore a blue shirt, smoke-gray jacket open at the front, and black trousers, which were tucked into tan boots. A large pistol was secured in a holster on its right thigh.
"Yes, yes, yes, I am Amendus Dres," the alien said. "I wonder if I might be of assistance."
Carson considered the mouse-eared alien for several moments.
"And you are,
The alien bowed.
"Abendu, fair traveler. Humble Pindinki trader from the non-aligned worlds. At your service."
Carson frowned.
"And why would you want to help us? You don't even know who we are."
Abendu stepped forward, spreading his arms.
"No, no, no, fair traveler. I couldn't help but overhear your conversation with the envoy. Vile thing adjudicators are."
He shuddered.
"Simply vile. And they've put their restraining droid on your ship?"
He made several clicking noises with his tongue.
"Dean Central should really rein adjudication in. I mean, the node thinks it can just walk over anyone it wants to."
Bindu stopped and straightened.
"Oh, where are my manners? I have neglected to ask for your name. Please forgive."
He bowed at the waist, head down.
"No apologies necessary. My name is Warrant Officer Kit Carson, 1st Air Nova Pathfinders."
"Yes, yes, yes, of course. Wait."
The alien tilted its head to the side.
But you are not Zeiss."
Carson exchanged confused looks with West, who stepped up beside her. Turning back to Abendu, she said,
"We've been getting that a lot lately."
Oh my,
Abendu said, clapping his hands together.
"My apologies. I meant no offense."
He stepped closer, inspecting Carson's face.
"Your similarities to the Zeiss are impressive, but I see it now, you are definitely not. But what?"
"We're called human," Carson said.
"Oh, man,"
Abendu repeated, exaggerating the pronunciation. He nodded.
"And where do you hail from, human Carson?"
"It's just Carson. Our homeworld is a place called Earth."
Abendu frowned, canting his head slightly to the side.
"You name your world for dirt?"
"Well,"
Carson grinned.
"Yeah, I guess we do."
"Yes, yes, yes. Such a momentous occasion. I've never met anyone from dirt before."
You probably wouldn't have,
West said.
We're not from this galaxy.
Abendu's ears perked up slightly.
Not from Kabitha, you say?
He clicked his tongue again.
Very interesting indeed, yes, yes, yes. Even more impressive that you made it all the way to Diasori in that thing.
He nodded to their ship.
The Valiant?
Carson asked.
Why'd he say that?
Is not looking like it could make such a journey.
Well, no, not from Earth, but...
West cleared his throat, giving Carson a knowing look as if to say, careful what you say.
Look, we're obviously new here, Carson said. Any assistance you can provide would be much appreciated. Right now we need to meet with Fadin, a representative of the Rightly Guided, then get our ship out of impound.
Abendu clapped his hands together again.
Ah! You see, that I can most definitely assist with. You need to just talk to a Regulus. No one calls them the Rightly Guided, but as a joke. No, yes, 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 I can show you where to go, but forgive me.
He bowed his head in supplication.
I regret that the Pindinki Way forbids me from giving of my time without some form of compensation.
West crossed his arms, frowning.
So... tell me this, Mr. Abendu.
Apologies, fair traveler. I know not this mister. My name is simply Abendu.
Abendu, West corrected. But I'm curious. Why are you so interested in helping us, other than compensation? You know nothing about us.
But I do,
Abendu said, raising a finger.
I know you are being subjected to Din adjudication without just cause. Those damnable nodes and their regulations. It's a wonder this whole planet is in fine for some violation or another. No, no, no. I first thought that you were Zeiss traders, who I happen to do a great deal of business with. The fact that you are not intrigues me. So, I help you.
If you'll just give us a few minutes, Carson said.
Most certainly.
Abendu bowed yet again and backed away from the group. Carson led them back up the ramp into Valiant's cargo bay. They were joined by Jerry, Elias, and Greer, who didn't look happy at all.
Who the hell do they think they are putting that shit on my ship?
Greer asked, tapping her foot on the deck.
Doesn't matter, Carson said. She turned to West. Do you think we can trust this guy?
Honestly, I don't have any idea, Chief. Typically, I'd consider myself an excellent judge of character, and I'd like to say that I think he's being straight with us, but I just don't know.
I don't trust him, Nunez said. Anyone that bows and apologizes as much as that guy does definitely has something to hide.
Carson shook her head.
Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of options here. Either we trust this guy is gonna get us to the right place, or we sit here and wait for old additional fine boy to come back, and who knows how long that'll take.
I'd like to meet this Din character,
Birch said.
Figure out why he broke my beautiful drone.
One step at a time, Carson said. First contact with these Regulos, then we need to get the Valiant out of lockdown. Elias?
The youngest brother looked up. Eyes wide.
Yes?
Do you think you can help Greer get that restraining droid off the hull?
Elias shrugged.
I'm not sure, but I can give it a try.
Good. That's your mission.
She pointed at Greer and Elias in turn. We need our ship free.
Popoff, you and Jerry have security duty. Don't let anyone on or off without my say-so.
Roger that, Chief, Popoff said.
A wide grin spread across Jerry's face.
Yes, ma'am.
Carson pointed at him.
Don't let it go to your head. You listen to Popoff and you do exactly what she says. You don't leave the ship for any reason. Is that understood?
Yes, ma'am,
Jerry said, the smile slowly fading.
Pretty sure we'll find something else for you to clean,
Popoff said.
And if this guy turns out to be a wolf in sheep's clothing?
West asked, giving the alien, who now stood several feet from the base of the ramp, a sidelong glance.
Pardon me, fair travelers,
Abendu called up from the tarmac, flapping his elephantine ears.
Might I suggest to bring weapons, if you have some? If you don't, I have a friend who can provide you with some at fairly reasonable prices.
We'll deal with that if and when it does,
Carson said under her breath.
She gave the alien a wave. Okay, rest ye gear up. Light kit, have your active camo ready and keep your faces covered. We don't need any more attention than we already have. If this guy can get us to